welcome to the Provider Podcast. I'm Susan Ball. In this week's episode, we'll be focusing on social care. This is a service that has suffered from years of neglect, underinvestment and broken promises. The consequences for service users, staff and for the NHS are all too evident. Yet following through on a fix for social care has proved elusive. Shortly, we'll be hearing from Sir Andrew Dilnot, who chair the Independent Commission on Funding of Care and Support. Sir Andrew and his team were tasked with exploring options for sustainable long-term funding for the social care system. The Dilnot Report, which was published back in July 2011, made a number of hard-hitting recommendations for a reformed social care system. Chief amongst them were calls for a cap on lifetime contributions for social care and an asset threshold for those in residential care. And yet 13 years later, we're no closer to seeing this much-needed reform. In the meantime, pressures on the social care system have continued to mount. The NHS and social care need to work in close collaboration. I spoke to Sir Andrew about the wide-ranging challenges facing the social care sector and how the NHS could support this highly valued partner. Sir Andrew, thank you so much for joining us for the Provider Podcast. I wanted to start by asking you about the extraordinary array of challenges facing the social care sector. Could you talk us through these challenges and how we got here?
Yeah, so social care does face an astonishing array of challenges. It faces challenges for the people who need care. It faces challenges for their families. It faces challenges for the providers of care, both at an institutional level and for employees. Fundamentally, we don't allocate enough resources to social care. So the fundamental problem, it's not the only problem, but the fundamental problem is we just don't allocate enough resources. And if I put that in some kind of context, in the UK, state spending on social care is about a bit less than £20 billion a year. And private spending is probably about half that. So total spending in the UK economy on social care is about £30 billion. Well, £30 billion sounds like an awful lot of money. But of course, the whole economy is about £2,700 billion. Public spending is about £1,200 billion. So we're talking about very, very small amounts relative to the overall economy, very small amounts relative to the size of the NHS or to total public spending. And what that means is that the level of care that's provided is not adequate. There are some people who need it that are not getting it. And being an employee in this sector is also challenging because all too often you're likely to be not paid very well. And being one of the organisations that's trying to provide the care is challenging because it's therefore often difficult to get the staff. So this is a really big set of issues facing the whole country.
And you've obviously talked us through about why you think reform is so essential. What do you think reform should or could look like? And how do we go about achieving it in a way that really benefits the whole health and care system?
So I think there are two different sorts of challenges. There's a short-term challenge, which is that the means-tested system that's meant to provide support to those who simply can't afford to look after themselves, that's underfunded. We need to put more money into it. The real level of funding has declined despite a massive increase in the number of people who need to benefit from it. That's a crisis. That's literally a crisis. We're asking people working in the sector around the country to make unbelievably difficult decisions week by week, month by month. It's not fair to them, as well as not being fair to those who are benefiting from it. So we've got to get more money in. We've got to get that in now. And actually, every year for the last few years, the Treasury has had to put more money in year by year because what's been allocated has been inadequate. But then there's a wider set of issues about how we set this system up really to work well for the future. And the best way I can describe the challenge here is that social care is not a challenge for which we should save. It's a challenge where we need to pool a risk. 80% of us are going to need social care before we die, but the amount of social care that we need will vary massively. Some of us will need a few weeks of help in our home. Some of us could end up needing 10 years of care in a residential care facility. We don't know before we get there which of those we're going to be. And that kind of challenge is a challenge that's dealt with by insurance. It's the kind of challenge we face in terms of our health, in terms of the possibility we have a car crash or our house might burn down. We face all of those risks by pooling the risk somehow in the case of health, for most of us through the National Health Service, some of us through private health insurance. In the case of our houses or our cars, almost always through private insurance. That option is not available for social care. So social care is the one big risk that we all face where there's no risk pooling available. And if we end up being one of those who faces a very high need, then we will end up using all of the resources we've got. That's a crazy example of market failure. It's an absolute classic example where we need to intervene as a community. And that's the reform, I think, that is needed. Some would say that the reform that's needed is we should pool the whole of the risk. We should go down the NHS route. It's a perfectly reasonable argument. It's not the solution I've advocated, because I don't think there's any chance of it happening. Government simply will not come up with that degree of resource. So if we're not going to pool the whole risk, at least what we should do is pool the catastrophic risk, the risk that you might end up having very high needs. That's why we argued 12, 13 years ago for a cap on the amount of liability that any individual faces. So you're taking away the risk of absolute disaster, and that both would give people comfort, but really importantly would also release them to spend their resources earlier on. And that's the only way we've got a hope of getting this market to work and making it a better market to work in.
So you've clearly laid out why you think social care reform is essential. And you also talked about kind of the role that government could play in this in terms of pooling that risk. Now, we're obviously heading into a general election year, and obviously social care is going to be one of those like big crunchy topics that will come up during the election campaign. So I think my next question for you is that what do you think are the key asks that political parties should include in their manifestos with regards to social care?
I think the sort of fundamental ask is, don't pretend it's not going on. Don't behave as though this massive issue that faces a small minority of people, of children and people working age, but faces all of us as we grow old, don't pretend it's not there. Be honest, face up to it, not least because it has consequences for the running of the health service. At the moment, social care is now in such a desperate state that it's having knock-on consequences for the healthcare system, and those consequences are severe. So grow up, recognise that this is a challenge that we all face. Don't pretend that because it's tricky, it's not there. So talk about it, face up to it. That's the fundamental issue. And once you've faced up to it, then you're going to recognise that action is needed by government. If somebody has a better idea than the ideas we set out 12, 13 years ago, nobody will be more delighted than me. So if somebody has got a better, cheaper, more effective way of doing it, that's great. But say what you're going to do and be honest about it. Of course, I would say this, wouldn't I? I think the answer is put some more money in right now to the means-tested system and put a cap on the liabilities that people face, so we take away the catastrophic fear that individuals face. But as I say, if somebody's got a better idea, nobody would be more delighted than me.
You mentioned there like the really kind of close interrelationship between NHS and social care, and how the impact on like how kind of knock-on impact of one on the other. How can NHS trusts work and support the social care sector without disrupting the local care market?
So that's very difficult at the moment, because the local care market is typically under-resourced, and so we do have people stuck in hospital facilities which are less well designed for them and more expensive than care, but without there being any care available. I think there's a variety of contexts around the country. I think seeing the social care system as the ally of the primary, secondary and tertiary care system is vital, working as closely as possible with the social care system. But I also think lobbying governmental decision makers to recognise that at the moment we have a system that is unsustainable, and a system that is both failing to look after people who need social care and doing damage to the provision of healthcare, and that this damage is potentially quite great. So we don't need very many delayed transfers of care to have a really big impact on the capacity of hospitals to do their work properly. So this crisis has now become so severe that not only are we failing on social care, but as a consequence, we're failing on healthcare and creating problems there.
You mentioned there the issue around delayed discharges and how the knock-on consequences of patients who are well enough to leave hospital but are sometimes struggling to find social care places. And that is a real and ongoing problem, not just in winter, but throughout the year, isn't it?
It really is. And I think I love numbers. I really, really love numbers. I love data. And one of the things that I think it's important to remember is that most hospitals expect an average length of stay in the very low single digits, you know, 1, 2, 3 days. You've only got to have, you know, if you've got somebody who, because there isn't social care available, is in a hospital bed for 20 days, then that can easily be 10 elective admissions, which become impossible. Mm. So small changes to the numbers of people who are stuck in hospital where they don't want to be, and which is less good for them than being in an appropriate social care setting, can have massive knock-on consequences for the effectiveness of the hospital system, which deeply frustrating for nurses and practitioners in hospital, as well as deeply frustrating for the people who need care. So it's an integrated system. We can't make the health system work well if we've got a social care system struggling as badly as we have at the moment.
Thank you. And then what do you think NHS providers as an organisation could do to help support social care providers alongside our kind of our usual calls for social care reform? Like, what can we practically do?
So honestly, I think the most important practical thing is to raise this issue up the agenda. The thing that I find most distressing, nearly 14 years after I started working again on this, is how invisible social care is. And unless we make it more visible, we're not going to get much done. I'm afraid I've had conversations with a number of Secretaries of State for Health who have felt that if they try to get money for both social care and health, they'll get less than they wanted for health and they won't get anything with social care, so they're not even going to try. We have to make this more visible. We have to talk about the interactions between the two systems. At a practical level on the ground, I think including the social care providers and the social care system within the way that you think about the provision of care can help. But fundamentally, the system is so under-resourced that we're not going to be able to make really game-changing differences across the country by doing that. We have to see reform. It has got to the point where marginal change is not going to help. I think one of the things that's really important to remember about social care is that it's wonderful. And not only are the people delivering the care wonderful, but the lives of many of the people receiving the care are wonderful. It's too easy to imagine that needing social care is being in God's waiting room. And that all we're doing is just trying to keep people just about going. The self-reported satisfaction of many people receiving social care is very high. In fact, often higher than those of us who aren't at that point. So it really can be a way of giving people thriving, wonderful, fruitful lives. And the care that makes that possible is being delivered by wonderful people, 1.5 million of them being paid to do it, plus many millions of informal carers. So, of course, there are aspects of this that are frightening, but there are also many, many aspects to celebrate. And just as we have a healthcare system, not to make the economy run more effectively, but because we want people to have flourishing, long, happy lives, that's what we have a social care system for, and it can really deliver it.
So Julian, some really hard-hitting words there from Sir Andrew Dilnot about the challenges facing social care and the need for all politicians of all colours to really grow up about the conversation. What do you think about that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's really clear, isn't it, that for too long, successive governments have dodged difficult decisions about social care. And the consequences of that inaction are absolutely plain for everyone to see. Social care has to have serious political attention, meaningful reform, and long-term sustainable funding to address those huge amounts of unmet and undermet need. and the quality of care and really chronic workforce shortages. And that inadequate funding for social care has had and is having a huge impact on people's health and well-being, and of course on the NHS, which is inextricably linked to social care. And those overstretched social care services are having a direct impact on the NHS's ability to deliver. So with a general election fast approaching, it's absolutely vital that politicians take social care seriously.
So as Andrew also mentioned, the knock-on consequences and the impact that underfunding and investment in social care has had on the NHS. So in your time as a chief executive, what did you see happening on the ground because of that impact? And what did trust members tell you about the impact of social care underfunding on NHS services?
Well, absolutely, Susan. And this manifests itself kind of multiple levels. And I think one of the most stark and obvious manifestations is obviously the number of patients in hospitals that don't need to be in hospitals. They would be better served in social care settings or indeed at home with support, which social care plays a key role in. So the fact that we have up to 14,000 patients in our hospitals right now, that's the equivalent of 20 hospitals worth of patients that don't need to be there, has a direct impact on the flow of patients through hospital, the impact on emergency care and elective recovery, and crucially for those patients not being in the right setting, and issues of deconditioning and lack of rehabilitation. Those are really serious issues, and that is directly linked to the lack of capacity and workforce shortages in social care. Now, I saw that in terms of my experience. I think where we see positive steps is where social care and the NHS are finding creative solutions to that. But even with that, there does need to be a renewed settlement with social care in terms of restoring its ability to respond. And actually, there's more to it, of course, than hospitals. Social care plays such an important role in relation to health inequalities, supporting communities, doing vital work to prevent people entering hospital in the first place. So you look at all routes and all roads lead back to the importance of investment in social care.
I mean, looking at the winter statistics and the performance stats there, I mean, I think just from what I have seen, that on any given week, like between 13,000 and 14,000 patients who no longer need to be in hospital are stuck in hospital beds because of a lack of sometimes capacity in social care. And what does that mean for like the day-to-day operations of hospital and other services?
Well, it means that you're not able to discharge patients quickly and effectively and safely. It means that backs up patients then that are waiting in your emergency department to get onto those wards, which are occupied by often frail elderly patients that could be better served and looked after in social care settings. So it manifests itself widely. And of course, ambulance handovers, ambulances waiting to unload patients into ED settings, and the delays there caused by the fact that our ED departments are often absolutely full. So that does have a big impact on the acute system, but I also stress the impact on the broader social care and primary care and community sector, because they are just as crucial in the context of managing system-wide pressures. And so, of course, the importance of home care, the importance of maintaining people's health in the community to avoid hospital admission in the first place. Health and social care work hand in glove on this, and therefore the operational delivery out in the community relies heavily on social care colleagues, social workers, but also care assistants. And the importance of care careers can't be overemphasized, and the need, and Andrew Dilnot talked about this, the need to professionalize and lend prestige and value to those careers, I think is vital.
So my final question to you, Julian, is that obviously we're going to face a general election soon. What would you like to see in each of the political parties' manifestos with regards to social care?
Well, I really would like to see in all of them serious engagement, honesty about the issues we face, clarity about constructing a plan to deal with it, a recognition of the connectedness of the NHS and social care, a real commitment to expanding, developing, deepening the workforce in social care, and a recognition that we're not going to be able to support the most elderly, vulnerable, needy in society. And indeed, we're not going to be able to progress to make the improvements we want to see across the NHS and social care without a clear plan, investment, and absolute reality check about the scale of the challenges that we face. That's what I'd like to see in each of the manifestos.
Some really thought-provoking reflections from Sir Andrew Dilnot and NHS Providers Chief Executive Sir Julian Hartley there. A reminder that you can join in the conversation and subscribe to the podcast by following us on X, formerly known as Twitter, and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast. Thank you.